we are. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 913 on a Thursday that feels like a Monday. It is the day after.
That's right.
It is actually Thursday. It's the
day after.
And
it does feel like a Monday.
Yeah.
But that means we only have a 2-day week. If today's Monday.
Get used
right?
to that a little bit.
Right.
Every
and,
2 days.
You know, I'd like to introduce the panel at this time. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning.
Was it something I said?
No, I just want to make sure we know who's here. Former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
College Economics Professor Aaron Pasitti is here. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Communications Consultant, World Traveler Joe Bonilla here today. And welcome all. Everybody have a good
morning.
Fourth.
Yeah, it was good. Yep. Yeah, it was good.
What'd you do, Joe?
Not so much.
I was down the Jersey Shore, down in Cape May and Wildwood for the last couple of days.
Nice.
And it was a wonderful time down there. A little hot, but it was overall very good.
It's been warm here as well.
Yeah, what's just a tad.
What's the chloroform count out in the water there?
That one? interesting to say.
Because you see on the New York City beaches, you can't go on the
Long Island and whatnot.
So bad.
Yeah. But what was interesting, how deep the beach was. I mean, like, you think about, like, how, like, a deep beach being, like, you know, Jones Beach or Coney Island. I mean, this thing was, like, at least probably half a mile deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
A lot of room.
That
a lot of room.
That sure isn't the case on Fire Island.
Oh, yeah. No, no.
Aaron Pasitti, did you have a nice Independence Day, sir?
I did. My wife and I crashed two pool parties yesterday in two different counties, so that was wonderful.
Doing your part as America's guest.
That's correct. Yep.
How about you, Judith Enck?
A taker.
Oh, I didn't.
Really?
I was quite sad yesterday thinking about the state of our country and immigrants and separated children, and I just could not get into the 4th of July spirit. So so I mostly worked yesterday and stayed out of the heat, and I don't think I'm alone. I mean, it's hard to kind of... You know, it's hard to embrace the incredible values of our nation and think about what's going on, not just on the immigration issue, but
fact,
so many.
Judith, there was a poll that showed that 40% of Americans, down from something like 51 or 52%, were not proud of the country.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all you have to do is read the newspaper.
The email address here, I forgot to say, is panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. If you want to write a brief thought to share with the listeners today, panel@wamc.org. Obviously, Judith, not alone. Officials have identified the protester who climbed the Statue of Liberty's base yesterday, forcing the evacuation of Liberty Island on the 4th of July. Federal officials identify the woman as Teresa Akumu. According to officials, she was protesting the separation of immigrant children from parents who crossed the U.S.-Mexico border illegally. Now, the group that organized the protest at the statue earlier yesterday said Akumu took part in unfurling a banner at the statue's pedestal calling for abolishing ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. But the group, Rise and Resist, says no one else knew that Akumu would climb the Statue of Liberty. And, Alan, I heard your commentary today.
7:45.
Interesting thoughts about that.
I forgot what I said.
Well, you said there are basically, and if I paraphrase you incorrectly, Your Eminence, please let me know. But you seem to imply that there is a time to protest and then there's a time not to protest.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I think protest is really important. And I think we all have to do everything we can. In fact, I've been very critical of Schumer and Pelosi for not going far enough in their protests. However, I raised the balanced question as to whether or not you really want to break the law in order to do the protest. And I think that there, you know, I've advised people who are very close to me, don't do that. Don't do that because I don't have to go bail you out, you know, go to jail and have you have a criminal record, you know, forever. So nobody you know, of course. But that's what I'm thinking, that there are times to protest legally, bring a pot and a pan out into the street, yell and scream, go over to to the media and tell them what you're really thinking. But I don't know that you want to break the law.
Well, I thought your point, and again, maybe I misheard it. It was
thousands of people going to be going out there and couldn't go to the Statue of Liberty yesterday.
This was the point that I thought that politically a nuanced point is that you may be doing more harm to your cause by inconveniencing tens of thousands of people.
That's right.
Yeah, I disagree. You know, no question.
No kidding.
No question 4,000 tourists had to leave the island.
They were evacuated from Liberty Island.
Right, but
and
I mean.
And the ones who couldn't come, not right, the ones who were evacuated.
Right, and I'm sorry they were inconvenienced, but we are in a national state of emergency on a lot of issues. And why not the Statue of Liberty on the 4th of July? I think this woman was brave. I think she's heroic. She will pay the price for this because she was at a federal facility. She will probably serve lots of time in jail. And I appreciate her making such a bold stand. Now, I wasn't watching the TV news all day, but I understand that the cable shows were just looping it for hours.
Sure.
And I think it probably got people thinking, what is the point of the words on the Statue of Liberty in this climate that we find ourselves?
Well put, Judith. Maybe I'll have to reconsider my view.
Well, you know, certainly any bit of true disruptiveness will get the public's attention. And you look at with Alcatraz in 1969, you had Native American activists that took over Alcatraz. But you always think about there was a woman basically protesting immigration policy at the Statue of Liberty. You know, there was also a woman who sat in the front of the bus, Rosa Parks. You know, and that was a smaller incident. She got arrested. She paid the price. But you saw the long-term impact of her incredible work and the work of this woman, as we'll see today. So I see this as being the beginning. In order for people to pay attention, you have to disrupt their normal life.
The day that the Statue of Liberty was opened all those years ago, a group of suffragettes were in a boat circling the island, speaking out on women's rights.
But that's not against the law.
It's not against the law, but it was viewed as disruptive at the time. And what is John Lewis's quote? We want good trouble. Now, it has to be nonviolent. Mm-hmm. I don't think it necessarily has to be. I think civil disobedience is mm-hmm. breaking the law, and there's an important role for that. But I think John Lewis recommending good trouble is good advice,
right,
in this perilous time we find ourselves.
I think as long as this isn't a standalone event, it has the potential to be something positive, and that there's, very visible civil disobedience, which can go a long way in attracting attention to a cause. But there's also the behind the scenes policy building, an organization that goes well beyond simple protest.
Right.
And again, if that can this protest can engender that, that's a positive thing.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how this unravels over the next, couple months.
I'm hardly in a position to debate well with Judith. However, I would raise the issue of whether the protest gets you at more adherence or whether it gets in your face as a result of this. And I think that is all I was trying to say.
Right.
I wasn't saying it wasn't appropriate. I was just
not effective.
Yeah. I'm just saying if people are furious and say, why were those people ruining my holiday or doing this or that, then it really might not be a good thing. That's all.
Right.
Public opinion.
Right. Well, and I think Aaron's point is a good one. It needs to be sustained and followed up with organizations. So, for instance, tomorrow there's a day-long protest at the ICE office in Latham. This is happening around the country. There's a debate on whether to abolish ICE or reform ICE. And so people who are opposed to ICE are urged to go to the Latham ICE office. This is not civil disobedience. This is a legal protest, go for the day on Troy Schenectady Road in Latham if you have concerns about ICE. I think it's a perfect follow-up to the Statue of Liberty protest.
Right, and the Rise and Resist group, the banner they unfurled said, abolish ICE. We heard Chuck Schumer on these airwaves saying, ICE does some good things too. Let's reform ICE.
Well, I think what we want to do is rename ICE.
Or replace ICE. I mean, they've become this.
Rename and replace ICE.
Rename and replace.
Right.
I mean, they were set up after 9/11 to deal with terrorism. They're not on the border. That's the Border Patrol. But they are all over the country terrorizing people who are
who don't
look white in lots of public settings. And so I think there's whatever you call it, there needs to be a really close examination of what role they're playing.
We've all seen towns, Judith, where, you know, somebody we've all known for 20 years just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, disappears and is taken away in a long black limousine.
To ICE detention centers. And this is somewhat related. You know, there are over 200 immigrants being held in the Albany County Jail, most of them asylum seekers who were flown here by ICE from San Diego in the last few weeks. And there's a whole core of volunteer lawyers who are going to the jail to interview these people, to do the very first interview on what is their asylum claim, and cannot tell these people being detained in Albany County Jail what their future is, how long they're going to be there. ICE is in Albany. ICE is everywhere.
I hope Rich Honan is one of those volunteer lawyers.
I hope so. I thought of calling him. I forwarded the request to a bunch of legal friends and almost forwarded to him.
Well, he's
didn't.
A corporate attorney.
I know. So that was just a joke.
He can be trained. They need lawyers who can do this legal intake, and they need paralegals. Sarah Rogerson, who was on the panel that the roundtable held, was it just last week, at Albany Law School, is coordinating this. This is a very serious situation right here at the Albany Jail.
Well, there's also the recent reports that you had senior ICE officials that wanted to split the agency up into two, one for enforcement, the other for the immigration processing. So that might be also another option as well. But I think in terms of a PR side, they might want to change the name from ICE to something else. But then it'll get, you know, used again. The president will then probably still propagate it and promote it in terms of whatever form it could be.
Mm. Well, they just have to stop what they're doing and examine what, of course, everyone wants: protection against terrorism. The president is prone to attacking the FBI and Department of Justice, and there were reports last week that they blocked a potential attack, I think, in Columbus, Ohio. That was like a 30-minute news story. So there needs to be coordination against terrorism, but you know, ICE and Border Patrol, I mean, look at, you know, now they're starting to do DNA sampling of children and separated parents. They seem like the most incompetent and maybe purposefully incompetent federal agency we've ever dealt with.
You never know about that. But the other side, of course, is that we need to think about what the implications of this for American democracy are. For example, what about due process? Due process seems to have escaped us as a concept that comes first. Primacy.
Ah, you want us to wait?
No, you go ahead.
It's the round table panel today.
What the heck?
We'll do a reestablish here. Your thoughts are welcome at panel@wamc.org.
Oh, no. There's a guy at the door now.
You could hear that?
Yeah,
I thought it was just in my ears.
Yeah. Well, if you can hear it in your ears, then other people
it was
ears,
from some jerks in Tennessee who wanted me to know that I should buy something.
Really?
I have to throw my phone.
Is it some of that spray rubber stuff I see on TV?
I love that.
Cut my Jeep in half.
Is that possible?
Yes, it's fascinating stuff. The panel today, oh, what a panel it is. Judith Enck is here, Alan Chartok, Joe Bonilla, Aaron Pasitti, and of course you can join us at panel@wamc.org talking about the debate in light of yesterday's Statue of Liberty incident. And the debate, I guess, Alan, would you say that to some extent this is exposing some divisions in the American left, those who say reform ICE, those who say abolish ICE?
I think the big problem here is that Democrats should want to win in the by-elections that are coming up now, and that this kind of a fight is anything but good for their cause. It's bad. And, you know, of course, newspapers and news organizations, being who and what they are, will always try to play up divisiveness, right? I mean, there's just no two ways about it.
There's a lot of that going around.
There is, Ray. You're so right, as always. And I just have to say that this is a bad thing for Democrats to be going through.
Of course, there is a third side to the debate, that is leave ICE as it is. And I think there are people on the right who say it's doing fine. Go ahead. Let it roll.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that the president was hurt politically with his continued failed policy of separating children from parents. And so he's very happy that the debate has shifted now to abolish ICE.
Right,
I think
right.
the people who are calling for the abolition of ICE
yeah.
are many people of color who have had direct personal experience with this agency. And I think that viewpoint should not be discounted just because it is politically treacherous for Democrats. We are in uncharted waters here. I mean, even a year ago, if we thought this is would have been the condition of our country on the 4th of July, I think even with President Trump in office, I think many of us would have been surprised. Well, I never, ever would have predicted that we were taking parents and children apart from each other, separating them at the border, and doing a better job tracking our FedEx packages than our children.
That's a great line.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is that you think about when the president ran for office, you know, he had even said at one point, oh, I've been endorsed by ICE, by a federal agency. So I think there's a lot of confusion because once he started talking about ICE, I think that really entered the public sphere in terms of what this, you know, what ICE was doing in the first place. But I think the issue there is that it was so politicized that now, you know, if they are actually supposed to be vested with actual real work, that gets totally swept under the rug.
AFTV, anything for the base.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. You can't, according to this guy, you can't go too far in throwing more red meat to the base. Mm-hmm.
It is the roundtable on WAMC. We have the roundtable panel, and we have much, much more to go, including your letters at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Judith, Alan, Aaron, Joe, and Ray in for the other Joe. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday that feels like a Monday. Ray in for Joe today. It's the Roundtable panel. 9:34 is the time, and the panel consists of Joe Bonilla and Aaron Pasitti and Judith Ink and Alan Shartok, as well as you, the listener at home, who can write us at panel@wamc.org. And Alan, I see you have a stack of letters.
I do, but I want to point out, you don't have to be at home. You could be at work, for example, and secretly listening through your ear devices, you know.
You make a point.
Yeah, don't you see?
So in other words, you don't need a huge old Philco tube set at home. You
no,
can actually take
time.
The radio with you.
No, hey, look, people got to work.
Yes,
now.
You're
they,
right.
They listen to the radio at work. The dog, the Mr. Dithers doesn't know you listen. Mr. Dithers doesn't
okay.
know.
Okay, that's a good reference. A lot of people will get that one. What's new in Beetle Bailey while we're at it?
I don't see that around anymore. Is it still here?
No.
It's around.
I have not read the comics since Barney Fowler was writing columns, so that's quite a while.
That's very funny.
All right.
Okay, Keith says, I agree with Alan 99% of the time, but I disagree with Alan about the Statue of Liberty protest. Last week, over 500 women protesters took over the Capitol building and closed it down to protest childhood detentions. They were all arrested. There are families visiting the Capitol building and were inconvenienced. I hope their parents explained to their children why these protests were happening. To quote John Lewis, this is good trouble. We need more of it. Okay, let me just say, I'm all for protests, and I did say that before. I just don't think you should break the law, that's all.
This is, I don't want to say, again, because it hasn't played out fully yet, but this is kind of reminiscent, the discussion is kind of reminiscent of the World Trade Organization protests in 1999 when there was a very unified coalition between environmentalists and union workers about World Trade Organization policies. And what everybody remembers from that was the anarchists breaking windows in Seattle.
Right, you.
And that did a lot of harm to that movement.
Right.
Again, like I said, it hasn't played out.
And it did a lot of harm to the movement, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, but this yesterday was nonviolent, peaceful protest. It did break the law. It was civil disobedience. That's kind of the goal.
Okay, well, we've been over this ground. Joe says, agree with Judith. We agree the current U.S. administration dampens the celebratory feeling on our country's birthday. And that's from Mona and Joseph. I thought I said that.
No, okay. Judith said that.
She said that too?
Yeah, before you did.
And then Ali says, I agree with Judith entirely regarding the 4th. There's nothing to be proud of. How can we possibly be proud of a nation that began with theft and death, continued with oppression, and coast along, still on racism, privilege, and audacity. Nothing has ever looked heavier to me this year than the sight of the flag. And that's from Allie in Troy. And Matt says, choices. Liberals should understand that Hillary lost to a guy with morals and characters of Donald Trump. Silly demands like abolishing ICE and pining for some damning revelations from the Mueller investigation are foolish. Only a convincing win against Trump in 2020 will stop this. So who do all the Democrats have? Biden, Harris, and Garcetti? Question mark. Did you want to say something, Judith?
Yeah, and that is, you don't wait till 3 years away. It's the midterms. Right. It's a few months away. I mean, if we could get a majority in both houses of Congress to hold this president accountable and, you know, reintroduce the idea of separation of powers and accountability, you know, that's crucial.
So, I'd take one house of Congress.
Yeah, at least one, yeah. Right.
I think the Senate, there's a chance of two, quite honestly. Yeah.
Well, anything could happen.
This is a wild time politically.
I can just see the television on late at night, and they're saying, look at this. And then something dramatic happens. You know what I mean?
Well, most midterms go against the incumbent president, right?
Right.
Most. Remember Obama, famous, I took a shellacking, and mm-hmm. George W. Bush lost. Both houses went Democratic.
But let's not forget 2002, though, when actually he actually gained majorities in both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, when you know, so when you say, when the letter writer, Matt, says, silly demands like abolishing ICE and pining for some damning revelations from the Mueller investigation. Well, I get the ICE part, but the Mueller investigation, that's out there. And it depends on how he's doing his job and what he does. Because I was thinking about this morning. Let's say he comes out with a 2,000-page report, and it all just lays it all out. This one did this, and this one did that, and Trump's Jr. and Eric Trump and all the rest of it, and lays it out. It's going to be very hard to see what those Republicans do. Although, I have to say, they were looking on the trade stuff. They were going to the people who were hurt the most, and many of them were still with Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. Even though they may lose their jobs. Yeah. The thing about the Mueller investigation, though, is there's really nothing we can do about it, unless, of course, they try to fire Mueller and Rosenstein. But I think, it's kind of politically interesting to follow it, but we have no role there. So we've got to focus on the midterms.
Okay.
We meaning citizens.
Cheryl says, the law. Remember King's letter from a Birmingham jail? Sometimes you have to break the law to protest unjust circumstances. So 4,000 people were inconvenienced at the Statue of Liberty. What about the people who aren't white, who are terrorized at the borders by our government? And that's from Cheryl in Hobart. And Kevin Nichol. Oh, Kevin said.
Yeah.
ICE.
The other one.
Yeah, the other one. Oh, that, not that
not
one.
Not the one that you're thinking
no,
of.
Not that
no,
one.
The other
no,
one.
The other one.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to
good
read.
Save.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, good
save.
You're a good saver.
You betcha.
Okay.
Just trying to help.
ICE. Republicans are fine with new government programs as long as it's militarization, but want to cut Medicare, which will affect red state Trump voters. Also, how can Republicans live with themselves when we look back in history to see how Trump was so Stalin-like? Eric says, breaking the law comment. In the protest context, one possible distinction is between breaking a law that is itself unjust and indeed the source of the protest, in other words, Rosa Parks sitting in front of a bus to bring attention to Jim Crow laws. That's a good point. And breaking a law that has an indisputably valid purpose. For example, that prohibits climbing on a monument for safety reasons and to avoid damaging the monument. And that's from Eric in Shelburne, Massachusetts.
And also jeopardizing the first responders who tried to and eventually succeeded in getting her down.
Sure. Did you see those guys on the thing? They all had harnesses around them.
Yeah.
So that
right.
They didn't fall off. Mm-hmm. But they could have fallen off and hurt themselves. And Thomas says, comment, ICE is a representation of the criminal element of the Trump presidency. ICE is a visible nuts and bolts machinery that enforces the fascist tendencies of the Trump presidency. ICE should be defunded and abolished. And that's from Tom from Catskill. And Julie says, thoughts on the July 4th, 2018. July 4th is celebrated as a date Americans rebelled against the corruption corrupt leader who did not represent them. However, this year it's like attending a party for someone who has been kidnapped. Just a little note on the brave woman who protested the immigration to hires of the Statue of Liberty. This is very definition of being American. Protest is inherently disruptive of the combat. Disruptive of the comfort of the people. That is how inertia is changed to action. Okay, and thank you all on the panel from Julie.
Okay, and our email address once again is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan is on the panel. That's Alan Chartok to you. Judith Enck is here. Joe Bonilla is here. Aaron Pasidi is here. And, you know, it's nice to have an economist on hand because the trade war is a-coming. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. The things you hear during the break, we learned all about curds and whey. It's 9:44. It is a Thursday morning. It does feel like a Monday morning, but bear in mind, it is Thursday, and the Roundtable panel is in full steam here. We got Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasidi, and Joe Bonilla, you as well, at panel@wamc.org if you want to email in. China rejected threats and blackmail ahead of threatened U.S. tariff hikes, starting a defiant stance today in a dispute companies worry could flare into a full-blown trade war and chill the global economy. A Chinese government spokesman said Beijing will defend itself if President Trump goes ahead tomorrow with plans to raise duties on $34 billion of Chinese goods in the escalating conflict over technology. Chinese President Xi Jinping's government has issued a list of U.S. goods for possible retaliation, but the Commerce Ministry says it'll wait and see what Washington does. A ministry spokesman, that is a Chinese ministry spokesman, said China will not bow in the face of threats and blackmail, nor will it be shaken in its resolve to defend global free trade. Which is kind of ironic. China will never fire the first. Well, they're hardly most free trade, you know, they have some advantages. Let's go to Aaron Pasidi.
Okay, so I guess this is the first salvo in what is probably going to become an escalation in a tit-for-tat trade war. So both countries have declared that they're going to impose $34 billion worth of tariffs on each other's exports. So, so the European Union is the U.S.'s largest trading partner, but that's, you know, a group of countries. So if you exclude them, China is our largest trading partner, and China buys $115 billion worth of goods from us every year, and we buy $463 billion worth of goods from them. So the trade deficit, meaning the amount we send to China versus what they send here, is about $350 billion. So, you know, putting $34 billion worth of tariffs on $463 billion worth of imports is about 7%. So it's a drop in the bucket. The imports that China is – or the tariffs that China is imposing on U.S. exports to China is 30%. So this is going to – so what tariffs do is that it's a tax, and it's a tax on foreign trade. So it's going to raise the prices of whatever goods those tariffs are put on. So this is going to result probably in a bigger loss for the U.S. than it will for China, at least initially. And why that's the case is that it's going to raise the price of U.S. goods that the Chinese buy by 30%, and it's going to raise the prices of what we buy from China by 10% or 7%. So that's probably going to get Trump to call for a second round of tariffs. And usually trade wars like the one that happened in the 20s and early 30s don't stop. There's usually no negotiations. It just becomes chest thumping between two countries, and it escalates to the point where you have two losers and no winners.
Now, investors apparently in Asia uneasy already. The main Chinese stock market index, the Shanghai Composite, down 12% over the past month. Mm-hmm. Chinese exporters say their U.S. orders are already dropping in the previous months. So this is underway.
This is underway, and if you look at market behavior, the investors, foreign investors, domestic investors, businesses that are looking for to make capital investments are all very freaked out by this because they don't know where it's going to end up, and uncertainty is not the friend of a prosperous economy. And what Trump's doing is, he's claiming on national security grounds that there's, which is true, that China is violating international property laws. There's unlawful technology transfer. Nobody disputes that.
The Chinese do. Well, the Chinese say they reject the accusations of theft, and foreign companies, they say, have no obligations to hand over technology. And yet, the rules on auto manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, and other industries require those companies to operate through state-owned Chinese partners and share know-how.
Okay.
So, so
that's what China says, but the rest of the world, including the European Union and Japan, all disagree on that. It's very easy to reverse engineer a lot of products. That's not stealing intellectual property. That's just figuring out how to do it.
This is taking stealing's this not is the taking right know-how. Well, no, because they're willingly the Western companies are willingly doing it, but they don't like the fact that they have to do it to get their foothold into that market. Yeah,
sure. So the solution to this, and I think this is the bigger issue here, is that if the rest of the world is concerned about the technology transfer and intellectual property violations, the U.S. going in alone is not the way to do it. You need to have a coalition of the world's industrialized economies figure out a coordinated effort that can essentially put China's back to the wall and for some type of negotiation about the issue at hand, which is technology transfer and intellectual property. And the Trump approach is isolationism. We can do this by ourselves. We don't need the help of the rest of the world. And that's a little narrow-minded, a little short-sighted, and a lot stupid.
Well, I think if we had an environment where we were actually fostering a better relationship with our allies, then certainly to build that coalition would not be as big of a problem. But the issue is that you have a president and you have an administration that has a chaos form of foreign policy where basically trying to build a coalition is just out of the cards.
Right. I mean,
except with one country.
Oh, yeah.
The only country that the president seems to want to actively cooperate with is Russia and maybe Saudi Arabia.
I wonder why that is.
I mean, the other thing to remember is that a lot of goods that are made in China are not made from scratch in China. China is what some economists call the great assembler, is that they take raw materials from Germany and Ireland and the U.S. and Japan, and what they do is assemble that into an iPhone. So I think it's like 3% of every 3% of the cost of an iPod actually goes into China coffers. The biggest winner from iPhone production, as an example, is Germany. So about a third of the value added in an iPhone comes from German inputs. So all countries have a stake because this is technology that's made in Germany. It's made in Japan. It's made in South Korea, Canada. And it's not just the U.S. who's having this problem. So if Trump's really concerned about that, there's a much more successful route that's not going to result in a global trade war.
Are you in danger of understating the risk that China is actually facing here? I saw a piece in the Associated Press where most of these Chinese exporters, their margins are razor thin.
Sure.
And so there can stand to be quite a lot of damage to the Chinese economy. In other words, this is a game of chicken to some extent, right?
Yes, but China has the Chinese government has proven that they're very willing to subsidize struggling industries at all costs. So so China's government is willing to direct money to industries that might be hurt from these tariffs, and whether that's a winning strategy or not, I don't know. So I don't think you're going to see. China's government has a very clear industrial policy about subsidizing certain industries with below market interest rates, cash infusions.
Not protecting worker rights.
Right.
Well, yes. I mean, that's part of it too.
Cheap.
But and that's to preserve a lot of social stability in China and maintain the ruling power of the party. Mm. So I think a lot of people misestimate how strong China's position here is.
Tea leaves here, Mr. Pasitti. Does this go full-blown trade war?
That's the way it's looking now, between the comments with Canada, between the steel and aluminum discussion, is that once these get imposed, it becomes a very slippery slope. And I think once it happens, especially if the U.S. goes in at it alone, which it appears they are willing to do, then you're going to, like Joe said, you're going to lose allies, which we already have frayed relationships with because of other reasons. And then you're just going to see a tit for tat.
Now, when was the last time we had an enormous trade war?
The 1920s and 1930s. And then
how did they get resolved?
The Great Depression. Now, they didn't cause the Great Depression, but the Great Depression and the combination of World War II resulted in a coalition of the world's leading economies and countries coming up with what was called the Bretton Woods system, which was a very coordinated international trade order with the U.S. at the center. And it provided stability for 40 or 50 years, and now that's starting to be undone. And you can critique the Bretton Woods international economic arrangements as being pro-business or anti-worker, but a trade war is not the solution to that. If people are thinking about trying to reorient the direction of international trade, there's a lot of other ways to do it. So yes, tea leaves. I think this is the first salvo in what could become a much larger trade war.
So what was the despicable Hitler's worst move in terms of losing everything? And that was opening up a second front, right? I mean, he went to Russia. He should never have done it. Not that I'm on his side. He's a disgusting pig of a person. He did that. Trump is making much of the same error here in alienating all of these other potential allies that we have and keeping opening up these other fronts. It's just, it's crazy. And
like the spat with Trudeau.
Relations with Mexico and Canada have never been worse. Europe, these are traditional allies when you're that you need to rely on when you're
long-standing allies, right?
Yeah,
Raymond,
not anymore.
As the chief of this program, I wondered if I could just read a letter.
Oh, gosh, that would be great, sir.
Okay, it's from Mike in Albany, who writes the panel. I assume this email won't be read on air.
Uh-oh.
Busted. Now, that makes you, what, wrong or a liar?
Well, you haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
Is that all it says?
Yeah, I assume this email won't be read on air. I get it, Ray. Given it disagrees with the panel's view, but as a veteran, I think it's reprehensible that people do not see any reason to celebrate the 4th. How about celebrating the freedom to speak your minds on the radio and in public? Those who refuse to celebrate are deplorable. That's from Mike in Albany. Well, Mike.
What did you do, Alan?
What did I do?
Yeah, on the 4th. I didn't ask you.
I forget.
I thought you were going to twirl your baton in your front yard.
I don't know. I did something. Yeah.
Well,
I did something.
It was probably fun, right?
We had fun at the house. The kids were all here. Everybody was doing their thing.
So what do you think about that email, Judith?
Well, I appreciate hearing from veterans, for sure, who work hard to protect our nation, but I really disagree. I think the things that veterans stand for, which are the values of our nation, are really in jeopardy these days. And while I appreciate free speech and appreciate our writer pointing that out, with that comes responsibility to point out when things are really bad, and they are this year. And I also think for a lot of people, the way they celebrate the 4th of July is not a deep reflection on the roots of our country. It's hot dogs and hamburgers and fireworks and maybe a parade. It's not reflecting on the birth of this nation.
But should it not be a joyous occasion for those who are into that sort of thing?
I have nothing against that. But we are in very challenging political times. We just talked about how we are isolated in the world. I mean, we are fighting with Canada and Mexico, for goodness sakes. We're detaining people seeking asylum. We're separating children from families. There's a lot to be concerned about.
Well, now, Mike's letter is an important letter because it expresses a view, and we love that. However, you know, take a look at what this was all about. What started this discussion was that that we just reported on a poll that said that 40% of only 40% of Americans, are proud of the country right now. We didn't say that's our view or whatever else. So, you know, you can say that they're despicable but that's their views. That's the very democracy, Mike, you're talking about here.
Well, we do appreciate the letters, though. And panel at WAMC.org is the email address, panel at WAMC.org. Anybody else want to weigh in?
Well, again, it's inherent to the rights that we have that we can talk about. Obviously, if somebody does not feel that the country isn't going in the right direction, to Judith's point, I mean, that's what, you know, veterans and folks who believe in what we're doing have to do.
All right, we have to take a break. It's the Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC Thursday morning. It's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. And boy, what a panel. It's been a lot of fun today. Joe Bonilla, Aaron Pasitti, Alan Chartok, Judith Anker here, and you as well at panel at WAMC.org. You guys just finished the media project before the show, right?
We did. There was the usual chaos in there, the three of them. Mikey, you know, Mikey Spain.
Yeah, you call him Mikey.
I call him Mikey.
Oh, good for you.
Because
right.
of the television.
Little
commercial.
Mikey Spain.
Yeah. Well, remember the commercial on
does
the
Does Mikey like it?
You know, yeah, right.
I doubt he does, actually.
That's the one. And then, you know.
Kaylin Brown was
Kaylin
there.
Kaylin Brown.
And Judy Patrick.
And Judy Patrick. Right. Those, all of those people were there. And me.
Yeah.
And they say on the Media Project every week, anything that the newspapers want to do, any mistake they make, they just are all in. For newspapers.
So you're calling them apologists?
They are.
Okay.
And I, on the other hand, because I'm forced to make the program interesting, take the con.
Yeah.
That's not always interesting. That's not always fun to
no.
be the lone voice of dissent.
Right. And so I guess one of the topics on the show was, what's the real Alan Chartok like?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear
actually,
what that is.
We actually did not do that on the show. We did it before the show. Mm. And they all admitted that... The question that they get the most about me, what am I really like?
Yeah. And the answer is Pat Buchanan.
No. everybody, when I ask them what they say, they always lie and they say, he's a good guy. He's really not what you may think. He's this and that. But in fact, I think that they say bad things.
Really? Why? What would give you that impression that they would say bad things about you? Unless you're thinking bad things about yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Freud.
Yeah.
But I...
He was a quack.
He was not a quack.
All right.
So, okay. Except maybe on penis envy. So... What?
That's all right. Keep going.
Did I say something bad?
No, you can say that on the air. Yeah. Say it again.
Okay, so that's what. So let's go through the panel here. What do you say, Judith, when somebody asks you that question?
I say that you're very dedicated to the station.
Is that
you've had an hour to figure one out.
That's the best. Hey, I'm not figuring it out.
Okay,
that's
true.
Say.
Okay. What about you, Joe?
I mean, you built the station from 50 years ago, right? Or is it 40? When AMC was in
40,
the basement.
1979.
I added 10 years.
79.
40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Well, I say he's more fun in person.
He is a lot of fun. We call him Mr. Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually generally enjoy pre-show Alan. Yeah.
Really? And then during the show? not so much.
Not so much.
Aaron?
A modern day Pete Seeger.
Oh, boy.
Look at that.
You could not be nicer.
Or Dave Gard.
Stop that.
Another banjo player.
That's disgusting.
Why? He was a good banjo player.
Yeah, he was a good banjo player. But Pete was universal. You know, Dave Gard, getting Charlie off the MTA, that's the last time.
The Kingston Trio.
Yeah.
That's the last time we heard any major banjo playing from him.
Wonder what Pete Seeger would think of American politics today.
You are so right.
I think he's going to need more than just a hammer.
Yeah,
right.
Probably a splitting maul and an axe.
Whatever he's thinking, he would write it on a piece of wood and bring it to the station.
And we have it right here.
The email address here is panel at WAMC.org, and I know we have another stack of letters there, Mr. Fun.
Okay, Mr. Fun. Tom says, we forgot pollution. We all tend to forget that 70s, a more forward-thinking Republican administration saw that the way to make America great again was to make our country livable again by opening trade with China and creating EPA pollution as we know it in the 70s is a thing of the past. It was a policy that has benefited our people, our economy, and our environment bigly and is now sadly in great jeopardy. That's from Tom. And Roger says, in reply to the writer who thought his letter would not be read, I celebrated the 4th by going through the motions. I clapped for the vets and all the others at the local parade, and I had a picnic with my family. My heart was not in it, as in past years, however, there's a pall over the nation. Mm-hmm. And that's from Roger.
Well said, Roger.
Pleasant Valley, where everybody smiles. And Jerome, what what I do on the 4th. I read the Declaration of Independence. That's how I mark the day a childhood friend's family celebrated thus, and I have followed their lead. Right. I think almost every newspaper publishes the Declaration of Independence on, you know. So I hope it's for the right reasons.
They do that?
Yeah.
Cuts down on the overhead, that's for sure.
Cuts down on having to write another editorial.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so all right. And then let's go to Deborah. Trump and the Dems. Just wondering, do you think if the midterms go Democratic, that that Trump will swing towards the Democrats he wants to be liked so much at any expense? Plus, he was a Democrat to begin with. Oh, thanks, Deborah from Amherst. Did I ever tell you I love Amherst?
I think so.
Okay. So
I don't think he'll swing. I mean, when the president was first elected, a lot of my friends said, give him a chance. And sure. I have to admit, I really didn't, because he can't. We knew what he said during the campaign. But part of me did think that he would grow into the job, and a lot of the insanity of the first few months sometimes dims over time when you understand the importance of the seat. But that has not happened. I think he's gotten worse.
But why hasn't it happened?
Well, because, yeah, good question. That's what I was thinking. Because nothing seriously bad has happened yet.
No.
That is injurious to him. I mean, so there has been no trade war. There has been no military confrontation with North Korea. He's getting away with it barely.
Well, I think, Alan, you're going to say he's playing to his base. I think that's certainly true. But I also think it's because he's not fit for the job.
Yeah, I think when you
it's not quite that simple. I'm sorry, Joe. It is because you're right, Judith. It is that he's playing to the base. And this guy is convinced that the way you win is not to bring over the Democrats, because they're not going to vote for you. The way you win is to do it exactly the way you did it the last time, with the same people. And I have to tell you all, the polls are all indicating he may get away with it.
But again, I think he's progressively over the last few decades become much more set in his ways. You know, I think there were glimmers of, you know, possibly something when we had the whole Chuck and Nancy meeting. But I just don't see him going back to that.
And he doesn't know how to govern. He's not competent. He talks about the art of the deal. He's incapable of making effective deals. And I don't think he has the best interest of the nation at heart. It is all about him, what they say about him on Fox TV. It is, you know, we have a reality show presidency like we've never had before, and it's not good for the country or the world. The base will stick with him, but I think our better angels will prevail on Election Day.
He's inherited a very good performing economy. The unemployment rate's the lowest it's been in 2+ decades. So he's got a lot of things working for him that allows him to sustain that power, not only with his base, but also politically. And since there hasn't been any major international setbacks, that just probably eggs him on more and, you know, suggests that he can get away with this. And to the extent that, for people who don't like the Trump administration, that this trade war could be positive in dealing his first fatal blow, when you start to see substantial job losses in areas of the country that voted for him because of the very targeted retaliation of other countries. So
I don't agree with you. You know, Aaron, that doesn't mean I don't love you.
No.
I love you too, Alan.
It just means I disagree with you on this one, because I think he sees no proof that he is losing his base. In fact, if anything, we see quite the opposite. We see 90% of Republicans up from God knows where, saying he's doing a great job and we're not going to move. And he thinks that, and NPR goes and they interview the people who have been most affected by these trade mistakes, if that's the word we want to use. And they're staying with him. They're still making excuses for him. One guy this morning said, well, you know, yeah, in the long run, yeah, right now it's going to hurt me. But in the long run, I know he's got my best interest at heart, and I know it'll come around.
Ask the guy when he has no house and no car.
Right. I was going to say, when people start losing their jobs, Trump might start losing some support. Well, and I know that's a mean thing to say, because it's not always things need to get worse before they can get better. But
unfortunately, things may very well get worse. And I read an article recently about the opioid crisis, which the federal government has not been effective in addressing. And the counties that are most impacted by this are counties that overwhelmingly voted for Trump. So let's just get some functioning government here so we can deal with issues like that, which are really damaging.
So this opioid Americans. Crisis just happened since Trump was in office?
No, but he, and it started in lots of doctors' offices. But he said he was, you know, he put together this task force with Kellyanne Conway. He was going to fund it. He was going to address it. He inherited the problem, but he hasn't solved it. And you know, that's one of my points is I don't think he is equipped to govern. He's constantly in campaign mode. He's out doing these rallies all the time to feed his ego. But the functioning of the federal government is really diminished.
Isn't Chris Christie still the chair of that task force?
I think so.
So,
did you see him when you were on the beach?
I thought about that when I was going up the Garden State Island, beach right there.
So, Lots of pictures of Governor Murphy on the beach.
Yeah.
Well, it's a fine place to be.
Yeah.
Brucey says election Russian interference. We're hearing about the GOP delegation in Moscow meeting with Lavrov and others. I wonder if they're getting tips on how to run elections. I'm joking. Sort of. .. I'm worried about November 6th. If Republicans completely in charge, feel they will benefit from any interference, how committed are they to stopping the interference?
Well, that congressional delegation trip to Russia is really quite puzzling. They wouldn't let any Democrats go. These are called Condells, congressional delegation visits. They happen all the time internationally. They're usually bipartisan.
Yes, usually they bring Democrats with them.
Senator Jeanne Shaheen was disinvited, so it's all Republicans.
And, what do you think that is?
I don't know.
What do you think it could be?
They won't allow reporters into the room when they're having discussions with the Russian officials and the
Somebody
senators.
Somebody might set the cat out of the bag. I mean, one of the reasons you want only Republicans there is that there's at least a plausible possibility that Trump is in bed with the Russians, right? And that this
there is that possibility.
Yes, and that this happened. And therefore, if you have a balanced delegation, somebody might hear something or see something that would be embarrassing.
So you're saying that all the congressional Republicans, none of them would have a spine enough to say, well, listen, what I just heard at this meeting was truly treasonous. Well,
not the ones that made this trip, no. I mean, my sense is they're there to get the American people ready for some big announcement like lifting sanctions when Trump meets with Putin with no one in the room in a few weeks.
Yeah. Okay, so then we heard from Chris, who said, ICE exploded into Gestapo light. ICE is a military force that could easily be expanded into a roundup of political dissidents under an increasingly authoritarian leader. Have we seen any evidence of that yet?
We certainly have seen people of color rounded up in our cities and brought to ICE detention centers. And I don't think the media covers that much, but that is happening all over the country.
Okay, so Jim in Montgomery says, panel, if the coming elections will hinge on the conversion of moderates, independents, and the folks who usually don't vote in midterms, then these extreme positions of the more liberally minded Democrats will do little to bring these groups out to vote. The message should simply be, let's end the craziness and fighting, vote for me, and I will work for cooperation and sanity in Congress. Jim in Montgomery.
Well, you need excitement in the base. And obviously with last week's primary election, you saw a lot of excitement out of the Democratic base. In that respect, you still need both sides. You need the heart and the mind of the Democratic Party, and both are still trying to be figured out right now.
Ellen says, morning panel.
Good morning.
I keep hearing, no, not morning panel. The subject line is morning panel.
M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G.
A homonym.
No, M-O-R-N-I-N-G. Oh.
Is that like good morning?
No. The morning
this
panel.
This is a letter to the morning panel.
Right.
And the subject line says morning panel.
Okay.
I keep hearing that the Dems will win one House and possibly two. How about zero? This kind of assumption lost Hillary the election. The Republicans are mean and play dirty, and the Dems are infighting. Is winning everything in the 2000 election?
Yeah. Ask Bernie Sanders if winning is everything.
It is, says Ellen.
Because he got
E-L-L-I-N.
You know, the Democratic machine was sort of playing against Bernie a little bit, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
They both may play a little dirty from time to time. Just saying.
You always say just saying. Immigration, NAFTA, CAFTA. The separation of kids from parents, while deplorable and inhumane, is a distraction. The issue is the way trade agreements are actually carried out has ruined the lives of regular folks in Central America. That is where strong American leaders should be fighting battles. And that's from Tom in Pelham, 123 Massachusetts.
Pelham, 123.
Richard.
Uh-oh.
Aaron. So. Okay, doing away with the barbarism of separating children from their families at the border. If you look at some of the root causes of why there is immigration from Mexico and Central America into the U.S., NAFTA has lowered wages in Mexico relative to what's happening in the U.S., where wages have largely been stagnant. So, there are increased opportunities because of trade agreements in the U.S. for Mexican workers. So that's going to drive immigration. You also have the wonderfully successful war on drugs that has been going on in Mexico that has created narco states in a lot of regions where a lot of people feel terrorized and want to escape that. I think the writer has an interesting point that there are root causes that mm-hmm. are the direct result of U.S. policy, but that's totally separate from, like I said, the odious practice of what ICE is doing at borders now.
Brian writes, Hitler comparisons. Alan crossed the line when he tried to compare Trump to Hitler as it relates to trade wars. Your comments are despicable. Also we heard from Matthew, who said, watch out for boycotts. Angry at the USA for starting this pointless trade war, Chinese and Canadian citizens are boycotting American goods. But plenty of Americans are still buying Chinese goods at Walmart. Mm. Trade war will hurt the USA far more than China. Mm-hmm. Gains from tax cuts are toast.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, this is the slippery slope.
No one will give up their iPhone.
Right.
Okay, and then Richard says, panel, calling for the abolishment of ICE and replacing it with an agency capable of enforcing our immigration laws while at the same time adhering to American values which honor immigrants in a way to win, capital W-I-N, in November for Democrats. It is not time to be timid, Richard.
All right, and I guess that will be the last letter we get to today. Yeah. I want to thank Alan Shartok and Judith Enk and Aaron Pacitti and Joe Bonilla. And remember, there's still a heat advisory up, so if you're out and about, make sure you hydrate. Hydrate very well. It's hot out there.
And we want to thank you, Raymond. All of us want to thank you for stepping in each time and doing your job and doing it so well.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, although it is... I suspect you damn me with faint praise, but still.
Why would you say that?
There's more of the roundtable ahead and some good stuff. Stay with us.